perceived upon entering the palace. He gave her a questioning look, and she said, "It's not always on your shoulders to solve everything, you know, despite your clear centrality to the workings of the universe." There was a crash at the side of the room, and a new figure entered, accompanied by a number of power-armored individuals. Rifles pointed in every direction, and the palace guards wisely took their hands away from their weapons. The being walked to the bottom of the stairs, its scarlet leather a pleasant contrast against the gold, and stared up at the alien on the dais.
"Uncle," she called, "you've gone too far. Your gambit with the fortresses is not something the guards' words allow. Nowhere in the Dardos does it permit ending so many Zhoshan lives by your own hands. It requires quite the opposite, to protect our people whenever possible, using sacrifice only to our overall tactical advantage. You've betrayed your office. Please, I beg of you, step down. Surrender the mantle of Emperor. Let us help you heal from the madness that's overcome you."
The figure at the top of the stairs was apoplectic. The being beside Crotatok talked furiously at him until the ruler shoved him away.
"Former niece, former fleet captain Indrat Vray, you dare?"
"I do, former uncle," the alien in red replied.
The name and the color clicked, and Cross realized belatedly that this was the wench who'd come so close to killing him so many times. An involuntary growl escaped him, and upon hearing it, she looked over her shoulder to give him the haughty grin he was so well acquainted with. She turned back to the Emperor.
"I'm sorry for what is to come, former uncle. You have long been my favorite family member, my most respected mentor."
She turned and addressed her escorts.
"Half of you, clear the room. Leave two members of the trade caste to act as witnesses. Signal the others to secure the palace, and then the planetary defense center."
She turned and pointed at her uncle.
"Under my authority, as fleet and ship captain, I formally take you into my custody, former Emperor Crotatok."
"I'm afraid that won't be possible, fleet captain," came the trembling voice of the being that had stood beside the Emperor and who had now descended halfway down the stairs. "Challenge has been made and accepted prior to your entry. I and those assembled here will have no option but to denounce your actions if you attempt to halt the contest for the subjugation of the trespassers."
Indrat frowned, and her glare could have burned the armor off a ship. She turned to Kate.
"Is this true, Flynn?"
Cross was again surprised as she used Kate's name.
"It is. You took too long."
What he'd come to interpret as a small smile played across Indrat's lips.
"We were delayed by the Emperor's guards. It seems they didn't want to permit us access to the palace while such a momentous occasion was at hand."
She turned to face him, snapping into a formal stance.
"Captain Cross, do you accept me as your champion in this battle?"
He stood, disbelieving, unable to form words. Matthews smacked him on the shoulder blade, and Cross coughed and jerked back to reality.
"Yes, of course, fleet captain."
"Very good," she said, her voice rising into a shout. "I will act as champion for the humans. Let us meet within the lines of eight, vile assassin, and settle this matter."
The figure in black lowered the hood to reveal a broad grin on her scarred face.
"Let us do so, traitor."
Chapter 40. Indrat watched her opponent strip off her flowing cloak. Underneath, she was clad in tight leather, black, of course, with telltales that suggested additional armor in various locations. The assassin wore short swords at her waist and had a pair of daggers strapped to the outside of her thighs. She finished her limbering ritual and stepped within the lines. Indrad gave a decisive nod and moved to stand beside one of her escorts. Her hands released the buckle of her wide gun belt, red leather to match the rest of her outfit. She handed it and the two holstered pistols it supported to her guard. She reached over her shoulder to touch the Insanti set blades sheathed there, then tapped the dagger that rode on her left thigh. A flex and twist of each wrist confirmed the tight presence of the hidden sheaths under her top along the inside of each forearm. She stretched broadly, extending arms, legs, and wings to their full length, then slipped into a slow and forceful martial form that would warm her muscles in the shortest duration. As she moved, she pushed her thoughts inward, seeking that perfect combination of awareness and tranquility which marked her best fighting mind. Several minutes later, she found the zone and opened her eyes to see her opponent awaiting her with a cocky grin on her damaged face. Indrat took a deep breath and stepped into the octagon. She was surprised when the energy beams didn't materialize and squinted up at her former uncle, who was again locked in conversation with his seneschal. She dismissed them from her mind and focused solely on her enemy.
"First blood?" Indrat asked with a sneer.
"Hardly," rasped her opponent.
"Death to go beyond?"
"Of course," the assassin replied.
A member of the palace guard stepped forward, as did one of her own. Should either of them step, fall, or be propelled across the lines forming the octagon, they'd be shot and killed.
"At your pleasure," she said,
and gave a small bow, her arms wide and 1 foot back. Varen nodded in response and drew her short swords with a flourish. Indrat reached over her shoulder and pulled her long sword free. She stepped forward into a guard stance, both hands on the hilt, left knee bent before her, weight on her rear leg. Instead of charging, the assassin circled, forcing her to abandon her planned defense and maneuver away. Varen made lazy figure eights with each blade.
"You have no idea how long I've waited for this, Straitor,"
she said, with something that sounded like emotion.
"Oh, I think I have an idea," Indrat responded.
With a cry and a stomp, she feinted a charge, and the assassin moved to defend. The smirk at forcing a response was wiped from Indrat's face as her foe turned her overreaction into a spinning attack, bringing both blades at her from wickedly different angles. She flicked out the tip of her blade to redirect one and dove into a side shoulder roll to avoid the other. She recovered her feet in time to intercept a stroke aimed at her head and to lean out of the way of the stab at her heart. The assassin landed a kick against her ribs that knocked her off balance for an instant and stole her breath. Indrat went with the force of the blow and staggered sideways to escape. Varen pressed her advantage, driving forward and slashing both swords across her body from opposite directions, parallel to the floor. Indrat's last stumble had been planned, however, and she dropped and spun, bringing her heel around to sweep the assassin's feet. Unfortunately, she was no longer there, and Indrat was forced to dive blindly again, having lost sight of her opponent. Luck was with her, and she landed far enough away from the black-clad figure to catch her breath.
"Starship living has made you soft, fleet captain,"
Varen sneered.
"And too much exposure to the madness of my uncle has dulled your wits, fool,"
she countered. She charged, leading with her longsword in an attempt to get past her opponent's defenses at a range beyond the short sword's abilities to counter. Again, the woman vanished from before her like a leaf in the wind, leaping into a sideways flip. As soon as she landed, she was in the air again, and Indrat barely got her blade up in time to deflect the mid-air strike her opponent threw at her. Varen tumbled through her somersault and returned to the ground with a double slash down at Indrat. She swept her sword up to catch it. For a moment, they faced each other across the blades, Indrat's longer version trembling as she held off the pressure of the assassin's short swords. This time, it was Indrat that scored. A clean kick to the solar plexus that should have doubled her opponent over, but hit protective plate instead. She growled and disengaged, stepping quickly away to safety. With a nod of grudging respect for Varen's skills, Indraat returned her longsword to its scabbard. Although wisdom was her favorite weapon, it was too unwieldy, too slow, against such a quick and agile opponent. She drew the short sword, Peace, from her back, while her other hand freed her dagger, rotating it so the curved guards faced her enemy. The blade changed, pointed down at an angle. She lifted the sword to high guard and stepped into the primary stance of a blade style, which relied on speed. The assassin moved into a defense from the same school, as if to mock her, and beckoned Indraat with the tip of her forward blade. Indraat growled and charged, and the blades rang as they passed. Indraat blocked the first with her left-hand dagger, striking at the assassin's legs with a sharp cut from the sword in her right. The assassin deflected it with her second blade, disengaged her sword from the trapping dagger, and spun to aim a reversed elbow at Indraat's head. She sensed it coming and bent down to the side, placing her hands on the ground and launching a two-footed back kick. Varen dodged, but the strike caught her thigh, and as Indraat recovered, she could see her opponent had been slowed.
"Oh," Indraat taunted. "I bet that didn't feel good."
The assassin snarled at her, an almost bestial growling sound.
"Grown-up words for such a child," she responded, and launched her own attack.
Her move defied logic. One moment she was out of range, and with a leaping sweep of her feet, suddenly her blades were licking at Indraat's face. She frantically blocked one with her sword and the other with a reinforced bar that ran along her forearm, but the assassin rolled her arm around and stabbed for Indraat's stomach with her right hand. She barely got her blocking dagger in place in time, and Varen turned the stab into a slash that sliced through the leather under her ribs and spilled sapphire blood to the floor. Varen pressed, stepping past to aim a kick at her knee, as the pain from the cut hit and distracted Indraat. Indraat twisted enough to take it on the back of the joint and dove forward into a roll to avoid the attack that would surely follow. She rolled to her feet again and scrambled to counter the assassin's assault as she stabbed at her stomach again. Indraat blocked it with crossed blades, catching Varen's second sword with a circle block an instant later, but the woman spun and landed a heel on the side of her skull. She staggered and teetered at the edge of the octagon, her vision blurred and her head ringing. The assassin waded across the way, twirling her blades as she watched to see if she would fall and be slain. Indraat took a step forward, and then another, to get away from the positional danger zone. Her damned opponent wasn't even winded. Fire burned within her, the surety that it was her absolute duty to end her uncle's reign, which meant going through Varen. Indraat feared the punishment the gods would deliver to her, and to the Zhoshin people as a result of the Emperor Hierarch's choices. She steadied herself with an act of will. Losing was simply not an option. She summoned a lifetime of fighting against foes who'd underestimated her, of going far above and beyond the expected, of clawing her way through the ranks. Her scars were just as real as her opponent's, if not as visible. Her confidence returned, and she took a deep breath to return to the best mental state for the battle. Indraat advanced cautiously, and when the attack came, it seemed as if the assassin moved at partial speed. She saw the lead weapon pinwheel down from overhead and stepped aside to avoid it. It was a feint, of course, and the second sliced down at her knees. Indraat caught it in her dagger's guard, twisted the weapon to lock it in place, then lifted a foot and slammed a heel stomp down against the blade to break it in two. She spun away before her foe could counter. Varen threw the broken sword aside and drew a dagger from her thigh. With her opponent's reach on one side shortened, Indraat was more certain of her attacks and met the next charge part way. Their blades clashed, ringing against one another three, four, then five times before Indraat delivered a cut with her dagger that would add another scar to the assassin's face. Varen fell backwards, cursing, and lifting the hand holding her smaller blade to the wound. It was above an eye, so it dripped blood, obscuring her vision. Indraat circled, moving in the direction of the damaged side, and darted in, testing the assassin's defenses. They were still strong, and her sword was knocked aside. She threw herself back in panic as the dagger sped toward her face, thrown from a meter away, and received her own facial wound. Fortunately, it carved into her cheek and jaw, sparing her vision. The assassin drew her remaining dagger as they circled. Neither spoke. The hatred in their eyes was eloquent enough. Her side ached, and as they moved, she kept an arm pressed against the injury to staunch the blood flow. She realized she couldn't hope to outlast the other woman, and charged while she still had the strength to do so. Varen brought up her blades to defend against the strike, but the attack was a feint. A crescent kick landed on the assassin's fingers, and her dagger dropped. Endrot released her own weapons and grasped for her foe's wrists, using the advanced hand-to-hand she'd learned from the soldiers to twist it violently in a direction it wasn't meant to go. The assassin performed an unreal flip to alleviate the pressure before it snapped the joint, but lost her blade in the process. Endrot held on and kicked the woman's legs out from under her as she landed, and they fell to the ground together. Endrot rolled to deliver an elbow to her foe's head, but she'd rolled as well. Before Endrot could recover, she found herself on her back, and the assassin's hands driving into her shoulders. Her vision filled with stars as her opponent's reinforced kneecaps landed on her ribs, breaking several and causing her to cough up blood. She wrapped her legs around Varen's to keep her from reenacting the strike, but lost the hand battle while she did. She ducked her chin against her opponent's effort to crush her windpipe, and instead struggled against the pressure as Varen used her leverage to cut off the blood to Endrot's brain. Her face hovered just out of reach, and she longed to headbutt her, to bite her, anything to get away. The other woman swam in her vision. The assassin gazed down with a condescending look in her eyes.
"It seems the gods have found you unworthy, Endrot Vray. Apparently, nepotism can only take one so far."
A familiar burn filled her at the sound of those words, uttered at her again and again as she fought to make something of herself. It gave her the strength she needed. With a hoarse cry, she threw her arms wide and twisted, pulling on the slender cables that stretched to the rings on each hand. The wires were connected to the spring-loaded sheaths hiding under her sleeves. The thin knives slipped out into her hands, and she caught them, then brought them forward and stabbed them into the condescending eyes of her foe. The assassin stiffened, convulsed, then fell away to twitch out her life on the stones beside Endrot. Indrot's guards rushed to cluster around her and administer medical treatment, ensuring she wouldn't die before she could receive proper aid. She levered herself up in the silent room and twisted to look at her uncle as he stood at the top of the golden staircase. He began to clap and descend the stairs.
"Well done, former niece. Well done indeed. Truly, the soldiers taught you to be devious and efficient. You're a credit to their training."
He reached the bottom and turned to his seneschal. The two men spoke in low tones. Chani shook his head repeatedly, but her uncle was insistent. Finally, he nodded in defeat and addressed the assembled crowd.
"Emperor Krodotok will abide by the outcome of the contest between the royal assassin and the fleet captain, Endrot Vray. He entrusts the emperor's mantle to High Commander Malus Fatal for safekeeping until an appropriate claimant has been identified."
She frowned. Something in his tone and in his stance warned of bad news to come.
"However, Hierarch Krodotok exercises his right as leader of the Zhoshin Church to invalidate the results of this challenge as it pertains to the question of the humans. In the history of Zhosha, never has a Zhoshin champion fought on the side of an inferior species. It is the position of the Church that such a thing cannot be allowed. The resolution of the Holy War will be decided between the original claimants forthwith."
Chapter 41 Cross groaned loud and long at the flunky's words. He turned to Kate.
"Did I just hear what I think I heard?"
You did. If what you heard is that you have to fight the Emperor.
Well, what was the point of the undercard, then? He groused, aware that he was almost whining. I swear, if I never see a bipedal bird again after today, it'll be too soon.
Technically, all birds are bipedal, Matthews remarked in an innocent tone.
Shut up, you, Cross replied. All right, let's be sure this is necessary.
He walked over to Indrat Vray, who had been placed in a chair near the octagon and had a team of aliens, presumably medical aliens, around her. He approached and said,
So, after all that, we still have to fight?
She looked up at him, and he saw the pain she felt in the fevered brightness of her eyes. He winced in sympathy.
Are you going to be okay?
She nodded very gently.
In answer to your first question, yes, you must battle my uncle. In answer to your second question, it appears so, as long as you win. If you lose, I'm likely to share your fate as punishment for my actions.
Because your uncle is the guy in charge?
No, because the gods will have judged me lacking by your defeat.
Cross shook his head.
You've got some hard beliefs, Indrat.
She shrugged.
The universe is a hard place, Captain, as you will discover. Again, assuming you win.
He sighed.
Any pointers?
Her eyes narrowed.
Above all things, he's crafty. Do not believe any professed weakness. My uncle trains regularly. He favors the mace and is a master of its use. He has countless victories within the lines.
So, be aware of traps, is what you're saying.
She shrugged.
Lady, I hate to break it to you, but that is not news to me.
He patted her boot awkwardly and drew Kate, who lingered nearby, aside.
Suggestions?
Don't die. Hit him harder than he hits you. Win.
That's not helpful, he said.
And then her lips were on his, and her arms were cradling his head. The kiss lasted an eternity, yet was over in seconds.
But that is, he finished.
He turned to the octagon to find the Emperor standing across from him, waiting. He rolled his shoulders and his neck, then looked around. Finally, he spotted it, the executioner's axe, and grabbed one of Indrat's guards to follow him. Moments later, he returned with two sticks cut from the heavy haft of the weapon. He smiled in continued amusement at the forlorn look at the attendant's face when the guard handed the axe head back to him.
Really?
Kate asked. Cross shrugged.
Murphy told me we'd train with sticks first because you could always find them, or something enough like them to do.
You've been training with Sinner?
He nodded.
And a couple of other Marines.
Kate shook her head.
Anderson Cross hanging out with Marines. Will wonders never cease?
It's time,
yelled the Seneschal, and Kate patted his arm before fading away. He matched his opponent's steps as he entered the octagon. Cross flinched as energy crackled all around him, and he watched as thin columns of controlled plasma climbed toward the ceiling, and circles of the same substance appeared at 1 meter vertical intervals to bind the space, joining with the posts to create a fence. He stared at his enemy, who paused to explain,
In the prior battle, the combatant's honor was all that was needed to enforce the lines. As your species hasn't shown such honor, we must do it the old-fashioned way.
The Emperor, former Emperor, removed his robe and cast it aside to be sliced to pieces where it intersected the energized defense. He wore what resembled high-tech chainmail. The links so fine, Cross's vision went blurry trying to separate one from another. In his right hand, he held a hammer, the huge head stained sapphire. In his other, he wielded a strange double-bladed axe, about the size of a short sword. It had a point on top, and overall it looked entirely menacing.
Seems a little unfair, you with the armor and me with pretty much nothing, Cross said.
The alien regarded him, unblinking, then nodded.
I wouldn't have the story told that this battle was anything other than fair.
The fence descended, ending about a meter above the floor, and the palace guard handed Cross a set of gear retrieved from the skiff upon their capture. He buckled on thigh armor, forearm shields, and a chest plate. He whispered a small prayer of thanks to Gunnery Sergeant Murphy for insisting he train in the stuff, although he still believed it was mostly sadism on her part. The fence returned to its full height. Cross loosened his arms, getting the feel of the sticks through the soft leather gloves that were the last piece of the combat gear he donned. He stared at his opponent, waiting. The Emperor bared his teeth at him.
"First blood?"
he asked, clearly some sort of ritual statement. For a moment, Cross thought about accepting. Then he considered it again and wondered if he was fast enough to score a touch before the alien. He decided he knew too little to trust to that outcome. Plus, it could be another trap.
"No thanks," he replied. "I'm looking forward to bashing your face in. I've been wanting to punch one of you for such a long time."
The Emperor laughed, genuine mirth in his eyes.
"And I, one of you, human, before we begin, I want you to fully understand this place. The lines of eight are prescribed in our holy book, the Dadas Vajro, as the ultimate answer to any question where opinion or belief is a factor. Through combat within this sacred space, we offer our dispute up to them. They'll give he who is in the right the strength to achieve victory, and deny the same to his foe. It's an act of worship we undertake, regardless of the outcome."
Cross was momentarily stunned by the idea.
"You truly believe that?"
There was no guile in the enemy's eyes as he nodded and replied,
"I do. Entirely."
He raised his sticks in the salute that Senner had taught him, bringing them up to gently touch his forehead and lowering them to his sides to point at a 45-degree angle.
"I wish we could have resolved this without all this violence," he said. "If only you hadn't sought revenge."
The Emperor, former Emperor, shrugged.
"If only you hadn't trespassed. If only you hadn't fired your weapons. If only, if only, if only. All that remains is the future."
Cross nodded and stepped back and sideways with his right foot, bringing his sticks into a guard position, one middle forward and the other high. His enemy advanced a cautious step at a time, then darted in and swung the axe in a horizontal slash at his head. He dodged the curved blades, but the point of the top scored to cut his cheek as he backpedaled. With a rush of fear, he remembered there was plasma loose behind him and skittered to the side.
"Glad I didn't choose first blood," he thought.
His opponent turned a meter away and stalked him with short steps that kept him pinioned near the fence. The alien fainted, and Cross brought his sticks up in an X to defend against the promised blow. His enemy gave another nod, and he realized that he was being researched.
"Oh, no you don't, Birdman," he yelled, and charged at Crotta.
The Emperor stepped to the side and lashed out with a sidekick, but Cross was already past. He delivered a circle strike to the outside of the extended knee. His opponent moved with the blow, lessening its impact, but the thick weapon hitting an unprotected joint had to hurt. He circled the center with his foe, each barely beyond an arm's reach of the other, and noticed that the Emperor's leg was dragging.
"Uh-huh. Pull the other one," he thought.
He flexed toward his enemy, stomping forward and extending the stick at his face. The alien pivoted on his supposedly wounded limb to deliver a backhanded smash with the mace at his head. Cross brought both sticks around to block it, but failed to get them there at the same moment, and the force of the impact rattled down into his arms. He jumped back to avoid the follow-through blow from the axe and took a kick to his unprotected shin. Fire consumed his senses, and he fell to the ground in agony, instinctively grabbing at his wounded leg. His brain caught up and he rolled, narrowly avoiding the mace where it smashed down beside his head. Frantic kicks kept him rolling until he had enough momentum to spin up to his feet. He whipped the sticks before him like a shield as he rose, and they intercepted the axe again, a feather's width before his eyes. He disengaged and circled, limping. The Emperor stalked him again, waiting for an opportunity to capitalize on his diminished capacity. He delivered an overhanded chop with the axe that Cross blocked cleanly and followed through with a punch to Cross's face. Fortunately, the mace was held sideways in the outstretched hand, or it would have smacked him in the forehead. As it was, the blow from his opponent's mailed fist broke several teeth and filled his mouth with blood. He spat at the enemy.
"Is that all you've got?"
he shouted, feeling his control slip. He strode forward, chest open, a stick held in ready position at each side, and said,
"Quit running! Let's do this!"
The Emperor took the offer, punching with his mace to slam the heavy head into Cross's chest plate. The timing of the trap was flawless, and while one of his sticks was blocked by the axe, the other whipped through a short arc to smack into the alien's temple, right on the circlet. Crata staggered slightly as he stumbled backward. A glance at his own armor revealed the blow had cracked the plate in several places. It wouldn't hold up against another shot like that.
"Damn it,"
Cross muttered under his breath, and regarded his opponent through lowered eyes.
"You're a worthier foe than I expected, human," Crata said, straightening to his full height.
He reached up and freed the feathers atop his head, and they expanded into a shape similar to a mohawk hairstyle. The Emperor threw the axe aside and kicked it out of the circle, then tossed his mace from hand to hand.
"However, I've taken your measure, and I find you lacking. The gods have clearly judged you inadequate, Captain Cross. It's time to finish this."
The alien waded in. He feinted high, then brought the mace around in a low blow that Cross barely got a stick in front of. The force of the strike carried both mace and stick into his thigh armor, which cracked just like the chest piece had. Cross jammed a stick into the being's shoulder to disengage, and his foe turned it into a spin, bringing an elbow around to catch him in the cheek. He felt the bone break despite his tumble to avoid the power of the strike. He spat again, scarlet drops against the sapphire of the arena's surface.
"All right, Birdface, it's time to go old school."
He spun his sticks once and ran at his opponent. The alien swung the mace as if he was going for a home run, but Cross had already dropped into a slide on the floor. He pulled back his leg and fired it at the enemy's knee joint. The impact took Crata to the ground. Cross pushed off with the other leg, sliding to avoid the mace as it sought his head again. A spin brought him to his feet, and his opponent stood as well, now honestly favoring his clearly damaged limb. Cross wiped a hand across his face to clear the sweat and cursed himself as an idiot for touching it as fire shot through him. Crata was worried now. As concern replaced the confidence in his eyes, Cross charged again, twitching toward the ground. His enemy shifted his grip and swung his mace low, and Cross countered by going high. An acrobat he was not, but his boots were heavy, and the impact of both striking the slender alien in the chest was dramatic. Cross fell to the floor hard, landing on his left arm, which went numb beneath him. His foe coughed and staggered as sapphire blood stained his lips. Cross pushed himself to his feet and swayed drunkenly, trying to shake off the sudden weakness coursing through him.
"We'll see who's judged what,"
he mumbled through his broken face, and charged the enemy one more time. Crata backpedaled and swung his weapon in a massive rising arc, circling it down behind his back and up towards Cross's chin. Cross knew the blow was strong enough to kill him, and he had no way to dodge it. Instead, he shifted his numb arm into the mace's path. The forearm guard and the bone beneath it shattered under the impact. With the time his sacrificed limb had purchased, he drew back his other one and planted his fist in the alien's eye, then followed up with a quick strike of his stick to his foe's temple. The alien was stunned, and Cross spun in a wobbly circle to reverse strike the stick into his other temple. Crata staggered sideways, dropping the mace and avoiding a fall into the plasma only by dropping to one knee. Cross stood, panting, and waited. The former Emperor was muttering something, but he couldn't tell what. Then a look of bliss came over his face. He nodded, and Cross tensed. With a scream, the alien launched himself from the ground, the hand that had been occluded by his body whipping forward to hurl a bunch of small objects at him. Cross threw himself backward with a cry, bringing his stick up in a frantic defensive sweep. As he fell, he heard a sizzle and attributed it to one of the things hitting the fence behind him. The impact with the floor robbed him of breath, and he convulsed, trying and failing to roll to the side and avoid the mace that was surely coming for his head. After an eternity of waiting, his breath returned, and he sat up in a daze. It was as if the room around him was frozen in a tableau. The former emperor lay spread out like a blanket on the other half of the arena, his arms outstretched and his body unmoving. Kate stood with her arm extended and a strange alien weapon in her hand, pointing at his opponent. Beside her was one of the winged aliens, the Flunky, who accelerated into motion as Cross's senses caught up to the moment. He reached a nearby column and did something that caused the fence to vanish. Cross had enough time to think that passing out twice in the same day couldn't be good for him, before he did just that. Chapter 42. Cross emerged from the darkness slowly, forcing his sticky eyes open. He blinked them clear to discover a bevy of aliens surrounding him and attending to his wounds. Already his arm was in some sort of strange, immobilizing cast that pulsed where it encircled the shattered bone. He tried to sit up, and a flurry of hands pressed against his bruises to hold him down. He opened his mouth in a wordless complaint. One of the hands was Kate's.
"What happened?" he asked.
"You won."
"Winning hurts."
"Usually does," she agreed.
In response to his continued efforts to rise, someone behind him adjusted the chair to a slightly more vertical position. The new vantage allowed him to survey the room. Several meters away, Indrot was sliding her arms back into the sleeves of her leather, and the medical alien supported her as she stood on wobbly legs. All the alien flesh that would have been exposed by the move was wrapped in bandages. Across the way, the former emperor lay on the sapphire stone, a crowd of feathered beings treating his wounds as well.
"He's alive?"
Kate followed his eyes.
"Yes, although technically he did die. It was the absence of his vital signs that dropped the fence so we could get to you. It took them a bit, but they managed to bring him back."
"The former emperor is not going to be very happy when he wakes up," she laughed.
"Huh. I doubt happy is an operative word for either of our species right at the moment."
He gave her a suspicious glare as he remembered.
"You knew she was coming, and you didn't tell me."
Kate shrugged.
"How could I? We were monitored the entire time. Or did you think the earpieces were only translators?"
Cross blinked and didn't admit he'd done exactly that.
"How?" he demanded.
She lowered herself to sit on the arm of his chair, pushing his unwounded limb aside.
"Shortly after we landed, so did the Ruby Rain. She came out alone, with her hands carefully away from her weapons, and we talked."
"I would have punched her," Cross said, "right in the face."
Exasperation filled her expression.
"Then I guess it's good you were unconscious at the time, caveman," she replied. "She told me what would likely happen and promised to arrive as soon as possible. If you hadn't challenged and caused a delay, I would have had to do something. How did you know to do that, anyway?"
He raised a hand to rub his face, and a medic caught it. He offered a nod of thanks as he recalled the damage from the fight.
"It was weird. For some reason, I couldn't get her out of my mind. I was hoping I could at least clock her once before it was over. I remembered the tales of the colonists, about the red-armored alien who gave them a chance. Remember? We heard that a couple of times, and apparently it was enough to make it stick."
Kate nodded, and her eyes showed she was remembering the stories, too.
"So," he fumbled, "that's it, then? Are we safe?"
"The jury's still out," Kate said, and rose to face the center of the room.
The being surrounding him assisted Cross to stand as well. When his legs threatened to give out, they gave him some extra support. The guards and the extravagantly clothed aliens who'd been witnesses to the events of the day were silent as Indrot limped to the staircase.
"So, what I said earlier," Cross began.
"Looks more like months and years than days and minutes," Kate replied. "You still in? Because this is probably your last chance to not be."
She kept her eyes away from him in real or feigned nonchalance.
"Whatever happens, I'm in. All the way."
He reached for her hand with his functional arm. Indrot sat down on the second stair, looking pale. The former Emperor's seneschal moved to stand next to her. Cross frowned, remembering something else. In a murmur, he asked, "Did you shoot Birdface over there?"
"I did. It was lovely."
"Where did you get the gun?"
"From the alien standing beside Indrot."
She nodded to indicate who she meant.
"Really? The flunky?"
"Much more than a flunky. It turns out he's the one who started all this by revealing the secret plan to destroy the fortresses to Indrot."
Cross shook his head. There were too many moving pieces to keep track of. He focused instead on the feel of Kate's hand in his own. Indrot gestured, and the man beside her spoke.
"Fleet Captain Indrot Vray declares an end to the war between the Zhoshin and the humans. Already a truce has been declared above, and each of our forces has moved out of engagement range. Spread the word to your castes. The humans were not the enemy promised in the Dadas. Our former emperor and hierarch fell too deeply into his commitment to the gods and has been afflicted with madness as a result. He will be cared for in a manner befitting his status."
"Locking him up for a century or so would be fitting," Cross murmured.
The man spoke again.
"Also, carry the word that the mantle of emperor has passed to the most appropriate member of the Crodder line, the daughter of the former emperor's sister, first of her name, Empress Indrot Vray."
"The king is a raving lunatic. Long live the queen," Kate quipped in a whisper.
Matthews snorted, and Cross grinned. The Empress's seneschal presumably beckoned, and the palace guards escorted the humans forward to the base of the stairs. From where she sat, Indrot's gaze was just above their eye level. She looked at Kate.
"Commander Flynn, I thank you for your assistance. Without our two species working in tandem, my uncle's madness would have won the day. I shudder to imagine the consequences for both of our people."
She made a gesture, and an attendant brought forth a blade with an ornate guard.
"This dagger is called Peace, and seems a fitting gift to mark this first moment of our cooperation. You've earned the gratitude of the Zhoshin people, Commander Kathleen Margaret Flynn."
Kate released his hand to accept the case, and stood with a proud yet stunned expression. Cross was suffused with warmth and pride at her success, well aware of the work she'd put in again and again to earn it.
"And Captain Cross," Indrot said,
and a growl entered her tone.
"You've been a useful piece of today's strategy, and for that, the Zhoshin people thank you."
She pushed herself to her feet to tower above him and pointed.
"However, I once told you that I would be the one to destroy you, and the antique you commanded. While I can no longer deliver on the latter part of my vow, given that your ship is now a smoldering wreck, the first is still an option. My promise stands. Should you ever appear in my sight again, I shall send you to join your ancestors in the in-between. For now, get out of my empire. Chani will see to the details."
She turned and departed, guided by the helping hands of her guards. Cross opened his mouth to reply, then caught the vicious glare Kate was sending him, and closed it.
"See? Even I can learn," he thought.
Chapter 43. 1 month later. The ceremony was being held at the most appropriate location possible, near a glassed-over area of sand in the Nevada desert that had once been a military installation. On that spot, humans shook their fists at the veritable gods above and gave all they had to protect their fellows. One day, there would no doubt be monuments and celebrations and a display of records and artifacts from the war with the Dzogchen here. Today, though, there were only soldiers, sailors, and marines gathered under canopies to block the blazing sun above. On the stage, at the front of the assembly, Admiral Martin Wilder stepped up to the microphone. To Cross, he looked older and more brittle, as if the war had aged him at an exponential speed. Inside, he felt as if it had prematurely aged him, too. "People of Earth," he said, for the benefits of the camera drones hovering nearby. "Enlisted personnel and officers, we're here together for several reasons. First, we gather in remembrance." Wilder doffed his hat and handed it to an aide. As he turned back, the audience removed their own headgear and tucked them away in the manner appropriate to their service. He acknowledged their actions with an approving nod. "Today we pause to remember those who died to secure the peace we now enjoy. From the oldest admiral to the youngest ensign, the gunnery sergeant to the midshipman." He nodded at the nearest officer from the AAN. "And all the colonists who were lost in the fight. Their sacrifices will be remembered in the retelling for centuries to come as our children learn of the dangers that await us as we explore the universe." His tone changed, becoming more aggressive. "And make no mistake, we will continue to expand. That's our second purpose here today. We gather to reinforce that commitment to our future. Humanity will travel among the stars, and do so with an open hand of friendship, ready to live and let live with any species we discover on our path, be they more advanced than us or still stranded on the rock that's their home." He raised an arm to gesture broadly. "There's no telling what we may encounter, but that won't stop us from searching. Discovery is in our souls. It's part of what it means to be human. The continent on which we now stand was discovered and rediscovered by people driven by that desire to learn, to know. Like us, they made mistakes, some of them catastrophic. Chief among them was the belief that their way was the true way, the only way." He dropped his hand again, and his voice turned softer. "We learned that lesson, finally, against the Dzogchen. Humanity must always hold true to our values, but also must be aware that others' beliefs are just as vital to them as ours are to us. We will strive always to find a way to meet in the middle." Wilder's voice rose, and a grin broke out on his face. "And last, today we gather for one last reason, to celebrate the heroic actions of our military personnel." Each of the services was called to the stage in order, and commendations were given, promotions were awarded, and a veritable fortune in precious medals and gemstones was pinned to uniforms. Eventually, the standard awards had been taken care of, and a hush of anticipation flowed over those assembled. Admiral Margaret Flynn stepped to the podium.
"I call Commanders Claire Martin and Kate Flynn to the stage."
The two departed from where they sat on his right and ascended to exchange hugs with Kate's mother. She returned to the microphone and said,
"First promotions, Commander Claire Martin, I hereby promote you to Captain."
Claire stepped forward to applause from the crowd and received her new insignia.
"Commander Kate Flynn, you're hereby promoted to Captain as well."
The scene repeated itself as Kate advanced and her mother pinned her new rank to her uniform. With a nod and a beautiful smile, Kate withdrew.
Further, after so much discussion, she turned and threw a glare in the direction of her fellow admirals, "it has been decided that the Phoebe and the Pandora shall be incorporated into the Exploration Division, as they possess the best chance of dealing with whatever we find out there. Captains Martin
and Flynn will remain in command of those vessels." The applause was overwhelming. Everyone knew what Claire and Kate had accomplished during the war, and aside from a few jealous officers, everyone knew this was a perfectly appropriate decision.
"Captains, you're dismissed."
Admiral Flynn was replaced by Seradwin Tomos, Commandant of the Marine Corps.
"Two squads of Marines were called to special duty in the final battle. They were ordered to board the enemy's most powerful weapons platforms and take them or deny their use to the Zhoshin Emperor. That insane being planned to detonate them as part of a plan that would have resulted in the destruction of every ship in the sector. Sadly, those from the Cancun sacrificed their lives aboard one of the fortresses, and they'll be remembered in a separate ceremony. The Marines assigned to the Washington, D.C. also suffered grievous losses. I call the surviving members of that unit to the stage."
Easy walked with canes, her legs locked in braces as they recovered from the brutal abuse she'd taken during the battle. The rest of the squad was polished and appeared pristine. Cross knew, though, that if he could see beneath the formal exterior, he'd find them battling the same ghosts that haunted them all. The Commandant awarded promotions and medals to Easy, Surfer, Flame, and Gee-Whiz, speaking to each for a moment before moving on to the next. Then she called the two gunnery sergeants forward. The Commandant greeted each with a handshake, then turned back to the audience with a laugh.
"Once again, both Gunnery Sergeant Reese St. John and Gunnery Sergeant Cynthia Murphy have refused our entreaties to enter the academy to earn their commissions. Nonetheless, we wish to recognize their unparalleled service in the leadership of their squads throughout the war."
An aide stepped to her side and opened two small boxes. A rendering of the earth lay within each, carved of precious metals that shone in the afternoon light. It was backed with a many-pointed sun in gold.
"The Earth Star is given only to those Marines whose accomplishments are so far beyond the ordinary that nothing else will do. Gunnery Sergeants, step forward."
They obeyed her orders, and Tomos pinned the device over each of their hearts. The Commandant returned to the podium and broke into a grin.
"You may be able to prevent me from commissioning you, Marines, but you cannot stop me from promoting you. Cynthia Murphy and Reese St. John are each hereby awarded the rank of Master Gunnery Sergeant."
She turned and saluted them, then said,
"Dismissed."
Before leaving, Commandant Tomos flashed a smile at the audience.
"It may amuse you to know that with this commendation comes the recipient's choice of postings. They've selected the Marine Raider Training Center as their next posting. I think graduating to SOC just got much, much harder."
Her words were met with a wave of laughter across the crowd, and she stepped away. Admiral James Okoye replaced her at the podium.
"I call Captain Anderson Cross to the stage."
He stood, straightened his all-white dress uniform, then marched forward. He had no idea what was to come, and truly couldn't care much less than he did. The battle was won. Peace reigned. He would ship out as an ensign on the Pandora if he had to, in order to stay with Kate. For him, it was all good. He strode toward his mentor, who moved away from his rostrum and gripped Cross's hand warmly, giving his bicep a squeeze of approval with his other hand. He stepped back into place and addressed the gathered crowd.
"There isn't much to say about the exploits of Captain Cross. From the moment he took command of the Washington, D.C., that ship was in the thick of things. She acquainted herself extremely well, right up until her captain crashed her into the soil of the Zhoshin homeworld."
Cross felt his ears start to burn as laughter swept the assembly. Then he, too, was forced to chuckle and shake his head at the events of the past 2 years. Okoye smiled and played to his audience's mirth.
"But that wasn't enough for our esteemed Captain Cross. No, he felt the need to instigate a fistfight with the Zhoshin Emperor. Captain Cross's actions prove that he's every bit as annoying to other species leaders as he is to ours."
Again, good-natured laughter rang out around him.
The only option, it seems, is to present him with a number of medals that recognize his actions during the events of the war.
He waved, and an aide delivered a small stack of closed boxes to Cross.
One more thing,
Okoye said. He gestured again, and large images appeared on flat sections of the stage behind him. They showed the skeleton of a starship.
On these screens, you see the first of our new Ares class of starships. She masses at about the midpoint between a cruiser and the carrier. She will become the backbone of our fleet. It incorporates principles of design and technologies adapted from the Domeki vessels we've acquired.
Everyone took a moment to admire the images.
Of course, most of her is still the product of human ingenuity and development. Make no mistake. She will be christened the Washington, D.C., UAL-2112B. Captain Cross, he said, turning. Until the ship is completed, you are ordered to attend to all the details of her construction. When she's finished, you'll command her.
Cross broke into a wide grin, amazed that everyone had kept this a secret from him and overwhelmed at the confidence being placed in him. Finally, he felt like he'd earned the position of starship captain. Under another canopy, military personnel gathered in twos and threes around high tables loaded with plates and beverages from the nearby buffet. Cross and Kate were together, but talking to other people. Cross to the newly promoted Admiral Dima Petraeff, and Kate to the former chief engineer of the Washington. Dima clapped him on the shoulder in a farewell, and Cross turned to join the other conversation.
But you're asking to go to the colony, right? Kate asked.
Janik nodded.
Spend part of the last month there. Everything is set. Once I finish making sure the DCB is properly built, I'll be heading there for good.
How's she coming along, Chief?
Cross asked, trying and failing to control his interest in the new ship.
She's not bent, so that's a start,
Janik said in an aggrieved tone that made Cross wince. The engineer's voice softened as he continued.
This ship's beautiful. You're going to love her. It almost makes me wish I was heading out again.
They shared a laugh, and the talk moved on to other things. Cross's unease grew. After the incredibly public award of command, he had no idea how he was going to tell the admirals that he wasn't taking her. Every part of him wanted to keep the commitment he'd made to Kate much more than any part of him wanted the shiny new ship above. He considered it again, as he'd been doing ever since the announcement, and arrived at the same conclusion. No matter how beautiful she was, the new Washington, D.C. couldn't hold a candle to Kate. He had 9 months remaining on his service contract, and when it was up, he'd be assigned to the Pandora with her. Or he'd be a civilian at her side. Another acquaintance came over to congratulate him, and Cross greeted him with a huge grin, utterly confident in his choices. If the other person misinterpreted the reason for the expression, well, that was very appropriate for the day. He snuck a glance at Kate and saw no doubts in her eyes either. For days, months, years, or decades, for however much time they had left in this world, they would be together. Chapter 44. 9 months later. The ship was phenomenal. Admiral James Okoye led their group, showing off the new vessel to Cross, Kate, Claire Martin, Alan Jacobs, and several political dignitaries. Cross felt like it was just for him. The tour had begun on the embarkation deck, a giant space with airlocks at port and starboard. It was twice as large as the ones on the older version of the Washington. It continued through engineering, where a set of 8 cores were somehow linked to power the ship's trio of engines and her weapons. Cross didn't fully understand the science, but since it meant the loss of a core no longer meant the loss of an engine, he was very much in favor of the design. Okoye took them through the auxiliary bridge, itself as nice as the main control area of the ship he'd commanded. He shook his head, remembering, and saw Kate do the same. They rode a lift up to a middle deck, then emerged into a short hall.